are back. I'm here with Kahir Suleiman, who is the co-founder and CTO of Maluba, and who is now a principal research program manager at Microsoft, and Zhongfeng Gao, a research manager at Microsoft Research Redmond. They're going to talk to us today about literate machines. They will share with us a little bit about the latest research in getting machines to read with comprehension and write like people do. Welcome, Kahir and Zhongfeng. How are you doing?
Happy to be here.
Great. Yep. Happy to be here as well.
I've studied NLP. Mm-hmm. I've studied machine translation. I don't know what machine reading comprehension is. So why don't you start out with describing what it actually is? That way we can get a sense for what it is, how the problem is structured.
Yeah. So, I mean, the groups here at Microsoft, whether it's Maluba, Redmond, or Microsoft Asia, we're working on this, you know, vision of having neural networks be able to take in large amounts of unstructured text and then be able to perform tasks with it. And these tasks could be something like question answering. So we want to be able to really comprehend this, the information that's there. And you can almost break down reading comprehension into these multiple levels of skills, one being reasoning. The other being knowledge representation. How do we represent knowledge about the world? How do we represent knowledge in the text? And then finally, extending that beyond to common sense. What is, how do we know about everyday things in our lives? And, you know, how do we then take that from text and do something useful with it?
I see.
I can give you a bit of history. Actually, over the last 20 years, we have tried to parse large amounts of text data on web and dictionaries by identifying entities and their relationships to create the knowledge graph, as Kahir said.
Sure.
But recently, we hit a wall in terms of performance by approaching it this way. And do you know what the missing piece?
No, I mean, I remember doing something, for example, like WordNet. And DeepMind was like an extension of WordNet that sort of mapped all these entities. But I always felt like, how are you going to represent everything?
Yeah, that's one of the key issues. Actually, one of the critical missing piece is so-called semantic reasoning. Put it this way, if there wasn't an exact text string that matched your idea, you could not find the answer. Right?
I see.
For example, there are tons of different ways of saying how long a river is. And remember, there's a key difference between similar words and similar concepts. That's why we resort to neural networks to relate semantically similar concepts and entities by mapping them into a hidden semantic space where semantically related concepts are paired together.
So my question is, because I understand how DeepMind would stop working because it's looking for like regular text and it doesn't find the exact text, or if the question is phrased in a way it's never seen, it's never going to be able to pull a semantic meaning. But my question to you is, that model, I understand how to code it, right? I understand how to work it. How are we using deep learning to represent text without a task, right? Because generally when we have text, there's like a task. I want you to find, I remember the first NLP thing is we had a bunch of emails of disease outbreaks and I needed to find what the disease was and what died. It was a specific task. But with machine reading comprehension, there's really no task, right?
Well, I mean, the task, okay, so if we're talking about understanding word meanings, we create this task based on this idea that words are known, their meaning is told by its neighbors.
Right.
So the words that are around it. So we build these models that can predict words around it so that we can get word meanings. But there is a task with reading comprehension.
Okay.
It's a QA task. So how do we test, you know, child comprehension? We give them a passage, we give them questions, and then we say answer them based on this passage. That's how we've been setting up, you know, tasks for reading comprehension.
So the main target of, or the main output of this is we want it to consume all this text and we want to be able to ask it anything about anything in any particular form. Is that about right?
Yeah.
And so how does it deal with ambiguous questions? Like, that's the thing I have a hard time with. For example, Dr. Gross was talking about the, hey, where are the 10 nearest pharmacies? Which one is open, right? How does it deal with context? Can it do that? Tell me about that work.
This has something related to why I said the hidden semantic space.
Okay.
In that space, all the language of different explanations will be represented using vectors.
Okay.
In that hidden space. That's an interesting thing about this space. If there's two text streams, they are semantically similar, that no matter how they are different from surface form, they will stick together in that semantic space. That's magic.
And so this network is literally gluing yeah. all of these things together in a way that we maybe don't quite understand, but seems to work.
That's why in most cases, the most effective model is trained by performing tasks, not by remembering things.
I see. And so and that's a human feature. So where is the state of the art in this area right now? Let's talk about, like, is it working?
So, I mean, I think the biggest and most interesting areas that have seen improvement recently are in the area of reasoning. The ability to use something called an attention model to figure out, to learn to look where in the text semantically things are related to the question, be able to combine these facts that are in the text together. Also, you know, we've made some progress looking at QA in a different angle as a generation task. So where you model reasoning not from the retrieval point of view, where we're just answering a question. You look at it from the point of view of what's the mechanism for generating the question that led to the answer.
Oh, I see.
So these are kind of the areas that I think we've seen the biggest improvement. Mm. But of course, I think some of the other areas like knowledge representation and common sense, there's still work to go.
What about you? Where is the state of the art for this?
I agree with Kahir. I can give you an example. Recently, we developed a neural machine reading comprehension model called the ReasonNet, which has shown a lot of promise. The model uses the neural networks to not only remember things, but learn to perform real-world tasks using knowledge such as question answering.
Okay.
Right? Actually, although we don't know exactly how human brain works, but this is a constant source of inspiration for us. For example, ReasonNet tries to mimic the inference process of human readers. Think about this. When you read a document with a question in mind, you always read the document several times, each time focusing on different portion of the document,
right,
until a satisfied answer is formed in your brain. ReasonNet works just like that, but in the neural space.
So Like, I just barely started understanding neural networks. I understand. Mm-hmm. I remember learning neural networks, but now that they're a lot deeper, they can do a lot more inferences. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to understand, how does it encode that information?
That's it through training. For example, we use large amounts of question-answer pairs as training data to help the ReasonNet to learn the models. Mm-hmm. Give you an example. You give a model a question. The model will try to form an answer to the question by leveraging the useful information or relevant information stored in its memory. But in the case that such information is missing in the memory, then the ReasonNet needs to learn to seek and store new information by updating its memory via so-called reinforcement learning.
Okay.
So that the network will be able to answer the question next time.
So for training, if I'm understanding this right, you give it a lot of questions, it creates a representation, and then you ask it more questions and more questions, and then it updates its representation.
Yes.
What does that representation look like? I'm trying to, like, because I'm a programmer right?
One of the things there's been some interesting work is on visualizing these representations. So if you could almost look at it like, the way we have to look at it is the way we visualize things going on in the brain. We have to, because what it really is a large vector space where certain things get activated based on certain words. That's what's happening, right? So you can look at it like the way people look at fMRI. So when certain words appear, certain neurons get activated in the neural network, just like what's happening in the brain. Certain regions of the brain get lit up. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what it really looks like. And it could look different at any different time of the network.
I see. And so what do these vectors look like? I mean, when I'm asking a question, like I'm trying to, like, because I'm a programmer at heart, right? We all are down, when it comes down to it, these theories are very nice, but then we got to type something into the computer. Like when it's coming in, what kind of transformations are you doing? And then how do you actually get the thing to spit out a reasonable answer? Because it's not just a question of getting information out, but then it's got to write it out in a way a human can understand.
So what happens is, and John Fung can talk more in detail about this, is you start off in what we call the symbolic space, which is the the words. They get transformed into a set of vectors. These vectors then get transformed over and over again by the neural network that's doing the reasoning as it updates its memory. Then at the end, we transform it back by making predictions based on the output words. So we transform it back into symbolic space. So now your answer is in the space that you and I understand. Yeah. But internally, you know, they're just vectors. And different regions of this vector space are going to get activated when different words come in.
I see. Zhang Feng?
You know, the neural space is just like your brain.
Yeah.
You can come up with an answer to a question, but I really don't know how you generate the answer in your brain. That the brain is in the neural network, so like a neural space. Mm-hmm. So usually you take the question from the symbolic space and map it in the neural space. Then in the neural space, that's where all these vectors are. You generate the answer in your brain. Then you need to speak out this generated answer, and then by transforming it from the neural space to the symbolic space so that people can understand that.
I see. So you're getting you're getting some real human input. Mm-hmm. You put it through this washing machine, and this stuff happens there. And then what it does is it goes backwards out of the washing machine, and then it outputs a really good answer. So what are some real-world applications of your research that that people are actually using?
So one of the areas that we were looking at is how do we take, you know, the state-of-the-art models in machine reading comprehension, and how do we put it to use with something that we would say would actually help people. And the thing that came to our mind was, you know, in your car, you have that 400-page auto manual, and you probably have never read it, but yet if your car gets in trouble, all that information is there. So the idea was, can we ingest large documents, like a help manual, user guides, et cetera, and then be able to do Q&A on this document?
I see. So next time I can't make my TV work, I just feed the manual to the computer and I ask the computer, hey, how do I make this part of my TV work?
Yes, or where is this in the machine, in the TV, or why is this not happening? Exactly.
I see. And is this a piece of software that's out in production somewhere?
It's in development.
Okay, I see. So this is really cool. What's next?
I think, you know, the big area, as I mentioned, the couple areas was knowledge representation. So while we've made strides in reasoning, but how do we represent, how do we factor reasoning from knowledge representation so that we can, you know, give it any arbitrary amount of knowledge and the system can then reason on that? And then the other area that I think is really key is common sense reasoning, which is, you know, people haven't, are working on it, but we haven't really made any major breakthroughs in this.
How do you do that?
The difficulty with this, I'd say the difficulty is that we are often working in what we call single modality. Whereas humans, we experience everything in many, many modalities. So we have sight, we have, you know, hearing, we have text, we have all sorts of stuff. And we get common sense, you and I, by experiencing it in the world. But when we give it to this computer, the computer can't experience the world. And, you know, text sometimes is not only enough to learn it. And that's what makes it really, really difficult.
I see. So there's like a loss in fidelity in just having things in text.
Yes.
That the computer
and this is because common sense is assumed, right? When we write text, we assume through the experience of in the world that the common sense is already there, that the reader is already going to know about it. So we just don't really write that. We don't write, okay, the ball went up in the air, the ball hit the ground, because we assume that, you know, when you throw a ball up in the air, the laws of physics apply.
Sure, I see. Zhang Feng, what's
next? Yeah, following what Kahir said, that's also the reason why the current machine reading comprehension tasks are a little bit too simple to develop common sense reasoning. I just give you an example. One of the data sets is called the squad. In that data, there's an assumption that given the question, the answer must be in the text, meaning that you don't need any common sense reasoning. If you read the text, you understand text, you get the answer. It's a simplified setting, which will not encourage the machine to learn common sense reasoning. We need a more comprehensive and challenging task in order for the machine to learn common sense reasoning.
And
we're working on that.
Yeah. And you're saying more complex tasks than just, here's a set of questions, get it out of this.
Yeah. It really comes down to, you know, you can do this with QA, but it really comes down to what you're doing QA over, and what is the reasoning and skills needed to answer the questions. If all I need to do is literally like do, you know, search, find, then the models will, and that's all I need to do to take, that's in this task, then any model that we train is only gonna be as good as that. It can only do find. We need to build tasks that really make it common sense reasoning required, or make knowledge represent required, or make complex reasoning required.
So is that the area, because I mean, because the first thing I thought is machine reading comprehension. There's tons of assumptions that I made. Like, for example, when I understand stuff in text, I'm making mental models that I can use later to do other stuff and learn other things. But the task that you're describing right now seems very narrow. What are some things that we're doing in order to make it have sort of that common sense?
For example, we try to introduce a concept called the long-term memory into model.
Okay.
Think about how people generate our common sense. It's through years of experiencing, right, of the world. And then what you learned in the past can be useful in the future to solve new tasks. But that's the capability that's lacking in the current machine learning machine comprehension tasks.
Awesome. Well, believe it or not, we're out of time. I wish we had tons more time to talk. This is really interesting. Thank you, Gahir and Jianfeng, for your insights into machine reading comprehension.